There's been a few, like, things, like, that fucked up. But that was, like, the most ridiculous, where we did a whole episode and nothing was recording anything.
Is that the one that we, like we recorded, like, the whole episode, and then we got to the end, and, like, there was no episode, and we re-recorded it?
Yeah, I think that was our... Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly now, that was our top five, bottom five of, like, the first year we did this. And I was so annoyed by it that I couldn't like fake it.
Right, I guess.
So I had Christopher come on so that it would be kind of different.
Yeah, I remember now.
To another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are my co-host Richard Wally.
And you're my co-host Cassidy Robinson from California. It's actually sunny today. I'm not just lying.
Yes. I mean, it usually is. But I've only been outside a little bit today. It's kind of amazing if I do anything during the weekends because... It's been taking my brain a little while to get used to working full time.
Right.
So when I get home, and when I'm home for the weekends, I just want to do as little as possible. Like, I actively get mad if I have to shower or get dressed. And I put it off. I'll just be sitting in my bed till, like, 1:30 in the afternoon, be like, God damn it! And then I'll get up and take a shower.
Oh, I just forget. I don't have that. I just am like, oh yeah, it's been a couple days. I should really do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're married, so you would think like the wife person would be like, Richard, you really need to not smell like a ball sack.
She really should. She says she doesn't notice, so I guess I'm just not that smelly. But
she's so nice that she.
I don't.
Or she's acclimated to your ball sack smell.
Probably that is more likely because she. I mean, it is true that my wife is a very nice person. I get that side most of the time, but she's also very blunt with me. So if I do smell, she's like, you smell horrible. You smell like a ball sack. Please go and rinse yourself now, immediately. So.
Have you heard of this new trend? This is kind of new, like, I don't know. I don't buy it, but there's this hype out there right now that says like soap is a myth. That it actually doesn't do anything and that, its chemicals are bad for you. It's like some hippie bullshit, but basically...
It smells good. I will say that. It makes you smell good.
Right. But, like, the idea is that, it's... That ultimately, you get it just as clean by just having, like, a shower. Just showering with hot water. Do you buy this?
No. But I mean, I do know that that's fair, actually kind of more accurate. I know that you're not supposed to wash your hair every day. That's for rosies, though.
I've heard that, too. Like, it's an every other day kind of thing. Like, you need your natural oils. Well, even
showering
dry out.
Is like an every other day thing. I mean, if we're going to go down that deep, dark path, I mean, let's talk about
how gross
it.
Can I be?
Well, I mean, every other day.
Without it being socially unacceptable.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, we didn't used to shower ever. Or put on deodorant. We just all sat around in our, as you would say, ball sack sweat. And
right.
Smell of the ball sack.
See, but that's the thing with the whole soap myth and why I don't believe in it. It's because I will believe that you don't need to, your arms and legs, unless you've been, you know, basically, like, running or doing something where you're going to perspirate a lot mm-hmm. and you're super sticky or dirty or digging a hole or something like that, then sure, soap up all the way. But I do believe that, like, basically, you know, the majority of the areas, water's probably enough, but... Under the armpits, the taint, I feel like that is a soap must every time, because there's, it gets pretty rowdy in there.
We're getting pretty, Remember how this was a movie podcast? We have this talk. I think we could actually talk about other things, like a whole podcast.
For a whole hour. I think we've gotten pretty close. Today we're going to be reviewing Terminator Genisys and in our Netflix homework, Beyond the Black Rainbow. I do know how to pronounce Genisys. I just like to make fun of it.
No, Genisys is... I laugh.
Anyway, let's get into the show.
Yeah, that was a weird aside.
Hold on. I'm dying a little. Movie news. As I mentioned before, Comic-Con is a thing that's happening right now. So there's a little bit of Comic-Con related stories that have been popping out. I think the first big one that I heard from work was Han Solo is getting a solo movie. Standalone movie, and it's going to be directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, of all people.
You had to do it. You had to make that pun.
Sure, I did.
I'm a little offended, but it's okay. We can move on. No, what I thought was funny is their reaction to this is like, you know, it's a bad idea. But that's pretty much like how we started every single movie we've done. It's like, you know, this is a bad idea, but we're going to do this. So... You know, all in all, it'd probably be good. I'm afraid when they take something that they believe in. That's what I'm really afraid right. for that day.
Yeah, that's the difference here. Because, I mean, I think they've always had this kind of, you know, this ironic distance. Mm-hmm. That every project they've taken on, because it's never been something I think that they really cared about. They've never really cared about being true to the source material.
Right.
Really. Like, 21 Jump Street, the movie, is a very different creature than the TV show it's based on. Like, to the point where there's almost no connection other than the basic setup of cops going to high school. You know, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, there's so little source material in the children's book that they could really do whatever they wanted with it.
Right.
And with the Lego movie, you know, they made this whole anti-capitalism... inside joke out of it. So I don't know if you can do that with a Star Wars movie, because I think the fans don't want a smart alecky ironic take on it. I think they want to see it done, you know.
You mean on not the character himself, but the actual like filming, like the style of it. Sure.
Yeah, the movie, the story, the writing. Now they might not write it,
because the character himself should be smart alecky and ironic.
Well, yeah. But not that kind where he's, you know, there isn't, I don't know, you know, there's always a sort of a meta
well,
thing going on.
Well, maybe he wanted to be an actor when he was a young kid, but he couldn't be an actor because the Empire existed. And so what happened is he had to become the cynical smuggler that he was.
An actor?
Yeah, he wanted to be an actor when he was a kid, but the Empire ruined his dreams. That's what...
Is that the meta way of telling that story?
Yes.
Yeah, but so I guess the debate is like, I don't know.
I
as much as I like Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and there's a lot of like a lot of projects I think they would be good for. I don't know if this is one of them.
I don't know. See, the thing is I think that it does essentially exist there. I do think it's a fine place for them to exist because what they really do. Like, yes, they do that meta stuff, and they do, but those are both comedies, and so they had to bring the humor, and so it comes naturally to do that there. But what they do in all of those is they still try to make a good movie regardless. And that's well edited, well acted, you know, the beats are working, everything works in it. I mean, even if you're talking about the action beats of something like, you know, 21 or 22 Jump Street, you know, that they hit them. The action was just as integral or just as much a part of the plot as anything. So I don't know. I think that they can. I don't know if there's anything saying that it can't be more comedic than other Star Wars things we've said either. I mean, maybe it'll be funny to watch him punch like aliens in the face. I'm not really sure what they're going to do, but I don't know. I think that so far they've showed only like their merit. And I think that...
Yeah, they've never made it a bad movie. I've never seen them do it the wrong way, but I kind of feel like I know what their thing is, and I don't know if that thing is going to be something that can fit into, You know, I'm more specifically just because of what I think the fans want to see.
I don't know. I think that there could exist. I don't think they're going to do the whole comedy route. I think it's going to be, you know, a Star Wars film. But I think as filmmakers, they're capable enough, and I think that they...
Yeah.
I think what they really actually get off on is the challenge of doing something that does seem like a bad idea. Because, I mean, in all truthfulness, not to have Harrison Ford, young Harrison Ford, I should say, as Han Solo, yeah. it does seem sort of bad.
Risky. Yeah.
At best or worst. So I think, I actually, when they said those two are coming on, I think it's the challenge that interests them. And I think this is why they took it on, as opposed to the few other projects that they did have gestated.
Yeah, true. Well, that and the big fat Disney money that's going to come out from it.
But if you're working out with projects at this level, it's big fat paychecks are kind of the understatement.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, they'll...
I mean, who wouldn't
appreciate they won't know money Disney. Like they've seen before.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your first story?
My first story, let's talk about that Ben Affleck. It seems like he's just signed on to write and direct, co-write with Geoff Johns, who is the creative director of DC Comics. He's going to sit down and write a Batman script with him and do his own standalone film. I could see this going well, specifically for Ben Affleck, if you did something in, not exactly, but kind of in the realm of the town with the character and kind of playing in a different playground, because we already know that a lot of it's already established and we don't have to necessarily worry about that. So, I mean, they can pull from anywhere from the Rogues Gallery. They can do whatever they want, really, because it's, and also we don't have to see a, this is how it happened, an origin story. So,
right.
I actually think this is fine news. I could go either way with it. It's not going to be Christopher Nolan's take on it, but I expect it to be different already anyways. So.
Right. I think, you know, Ben Affleck has kind of both an advantage and a disadvantage of following up a Batman versus Superman. Because I think that's going to set sort of the stylistic precedent if Man of Steel didn't already do that already.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the little bits that I've seen of Batman Superman really already looks like it is considerably more Zack Snyder-y than Man of Steel was, which was Zack Snyder kind of doing his impression of a Christopher Nolan.
Sure.
So I don't know what that means for Ben Affleck doing a standalone Batman movie in this movie universe. Also, we have the Suicide Squad coming out here pretty soon. That's going to probably be out before that movie. And I think all of this stuff, you know, because they want it to be like a Marvel Cinematic Universe, the sort of a DC Cinematic Universe, there needs to be a little bit of consistency tonally through all of these movies. So I don't know how much of Ben Affleck as a director, you know, Argo, Gone Baby Gone, The Town, how much of that we're really going to see in this movie, if any. But he is a very capable director, surprisingly more so than I think a lot of people thought he would be. And, I mean, he's an Academy Award winning director.
Yeah. the reason why I think you can with specifically like a character like Batman, though, is because there are so many iterations in the comics. And even when you have Batman, you know, in Justice League, he can jump from a Justice League title, which does give him a different flavor than if you put him on his standalone and him running around the rooftops being, you know, a scary lunatic or, you know, just a halfway decent vigilante lunatic. But it just depends on, I think it can go a lot of different ways. And I think that Ben Affleck isn't necessarily a bad choice. I think of some of the Stilly Blues and some of the mood and some of the other things from his other films. But I think it adapt well into a Batman film. And I don't think he has to be, I don't think it has to be Zack Snyder. Like, it might be that world, but I mean, he's already jumping in that world as an actor. So I don't think it'll be that much of a, because I mean, it kind of sounds like you're making like a big stretch to do it. And I don't think it will be at all.
I don't think it's going to be a big stretch. I'm just saying, I don't know what it really means. Whoever directs this movie, because I feel like there's a stylistic precedent that's already being set And I think that whatever he does, he's going to be coloring in the lines. But I don't think that, you know, better at him than the less capable director, sure. And I kind of feel like I don't know what opinion to even have yet till I see this Batman Superman movie.
Well, I see, and that's the thing too, is like, even I feel like when I watch the Batman versus Superman trailer and I've seen the Suicide Squad, I feel like there is definitely two different kind of versions. And, you know, and I think that they're giving them a little bit more breathing room because they have to play catch up, or they feel like they have to play catch up, I should say. And honestly, I think with somebody with his clout at this point, honestly, like, he can just do what he wants a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean,
he's going to star and direct it and probably produce it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. they're only going to be able to control it so much.
Right. I mean, I'm mildly excited. I like Batman.
I'm not actually for or against. I'm just like, I could see it being good. It could be absolutely horrible, too. I have no idea. But the speculation with him being there, I'm more interested, I should say, with him there than not there. I mean, he was going to be there as Batman anyways. So, I mean, I guess I'm not really surprised by the news at all either.
Right. Well, and there'd been rumors of him doing Justice League a long time ago. He's been in that cloud for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, it shouldn't come to a shock to many people.
Right.
Ava DuVernay is not doing the Black Panther movie. We talked a little bit about it, I think a few weeks ago, or maybe a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Time kind of passes by really fast with this kind of buzz news. But Ava DuVernay was originally kind of circling the Black Panther project for Marvel, and everyone kind of thought that was kind of like a cool but kind of a weird move for her, seeing as how she just did Selma and is kind of more of an indie-minded prestige director. Mm-hmm. To do a character as kind of, first of all, sort of unknown and maybe pulpy as Black Panther. But apparently she and Marvel had some creative differences and she walked away from the project.
Right.
I guess the bigger story here isn't necessarily that she doesn't want to do it anymore, but there's been little bits you've been hearing more and more, like outside of the steel 12-foot walls of Disney.
Right.
You've been hearing a little bit more and more by directors as time has passed of, like, unpleasant experiences working with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Obviously, that has been everybody.
Right.
But, you know, there's I think Whedon kind of came out a little bit and talked about how, like, he felt rushed here or there with certain things, and or that he was told to do things he wasn't so sure about. The director, whose name I completely forgot, who did Thor: The Dark World, essentially said that the project was taken away from him.
Mm-hmm. Alan Taylor.
Alan Taylor, yeah.
Is that what you were looking for? Sorry, you stopped. I was like, oh.
I wasn't sure if it was a him or her.
It was a him.
Yeah.
Well, Patty Jenkins was actually the first person.
Was attached originally, yeah, that's why I was confused. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I think he's pretty much sort of mad. And then, well, of course, there was all the most public thing we've heard about it was the whole
Edgar Wright.
Ant-Man scenario with
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright, yeah. So, and now this, I don't know. I wonder, you know, is the elephant's nudity becoming a little more apparent, or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, as the one thing that I think I've noticed is I think it's become more apparent that that's the thing, as time has gone on. And mm-hmm. I don't think when Marvel Studios started, and they did become part of a big corporate machine, and I know that there are new execs over Marvel Studios, and I don't know exactly, but I've also heard some of the rumors about it being more with other particular parts than the face that we hear about with Kevin Feige. But mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it is him. Maybe he's not very agreeable. But we've always talked about it being, you know, more like the studio system, And I've always kind of looked at Marvel as kind of like the studio system. And, you know...
The classic studio system, like pre-60s.
Yeah, and maybe directors aren't accustomed to having to work within those confines either. So I don't know... I don't think that they are working, and they've been pretty decent. So, I mean, we'll see. Maybe they'll learn their lesson, too. Maybe something won't happen the way they wanted it when the formula was working. So...
Yeah. Well, it's not like they're losing money.
It's not like they're losing money, but, I mean, I think that people... I think that that's basically what they're looking for, is to make a good product. And...
Mm-hmm.
I think if they turn out with a bad film, what I've seen, it seems like they try to learn. They aren't always successful, but I feel like that they at least try to do something different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's the myth of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that, like, they hire these certain directors, people like Kenneth Branagh or James Gunn or whatever, these kind of high-profile directors who have a very specific style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the myth is that, these directors are really coming in there and bringing their ideas, and it's all like this great happy marriage. When in reality, I think, you know, I talked about coloring within the lines, I think there's a lot of that going on. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think that they have very specific things because they do look at it as a big piece. They don't look at it as one each, you know. Yes, they are individual in the individual movies, because that's their, like, little thing, is, like, each movie has to be its best.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think it really... I could see it very much being either way. I can see the corporate structure being kind of an issue, the bureaucracy, the red tape, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I can also...
Or it could just be that some of these directors just want more freedom than they can be allowed.
Well,
you know, to the point where their scripts aren't in canon or something like that.
Well, in the back and forth, because I think the Edgar Wright thing is on this specific issue that people are talking about, it has been the most, like, conjectured one. And the best one that I've kind of heard is it's somewhere in between those two things.
Right.
Because I think that there is sort of an ego that comes with the director's chair. And it's not, and I mean, a director is not the only, you know, the only component in making a movie. I definitely...
Well, and specific, even more specifically, these movies.
Oh, right. And I think that... I think in a... It doesn't necessarily bode poorly or well. I think it just is maybe they run different than the idealized way that movies are made.
Right.
And maybe how movies have been looked at for a long time. Her saying, specifically with the...
Ava DuVernay?
Ava. Specifically with her, I know that her exact wording was, I didn't want to go down that road and then regret it.
Right.
Which she's like, I think we have different ideas of what we want it to be. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think... that sounds practical to me.
I mean, she's actually being very civil about it. And I think most of the people who's left... or whatever, have been, for the most part, pretty civil about it. They've never said, like, fuck those guys.
Right.
It's even though that might be what they say in their head, I don't know. But, you know...
Maybe. Probably Edgar Wright. It seemed like there is a little bit of...
More bitterness there.
Which is fair. I mean, he was making an Ant-Man movie for 10 years.
Let's go ahead and get into the main reviews. Or review. For Terminator Genisys?
Genisys.
And who should set this up?
You should.
You want me to?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, my heavens.
I'm asking a lot of you.
You are, because it seems like a million years since I've seen it, even though it's only been 2 weeks.
It might as well have been.
Right.
Did I just give up the review? I'm sorry. My bad.
Give up the review?
Yeah, I spoiled it. I spoiled it.
Oh, you spoiled it. You spoiled your feelings on it. Okay, so speaking of Alan Taylor, who directed Thor the Dark World, he also directed this, Terminator Genisys, and it starts with a very familiar setting. It starts in the future with John Connor, now played by Jason Clarke, who sends back Kyle Reese, now played by Jai Courtney, to go back and protect his mother in 1984, now played by that chick from Game of Thrones.
Emilia Clarke.
Emilia Clarke. And so it kind of starts out exactly like the original Terminator film that James Cameron did back in the 80s. And then it kind of switches gears a little, as these Terminator movies tend to do. And it starts to become more like Terminator 2. Because Skynet, the uber evil robot government that takes over the Earth in the future after Judgment Day, they figure out that this time travel plot is going down. So they send another robot, now a liquid metal robot, played by Byung-Hun Lee, to cancel out their plan. And then there ends up being another robot. And it's like a Russian doll of a plot.
Well, don't forget the main robot too.
Right. Well,
you forgot a robot. That's all I'm saying.
Right. There's so many robots. Arnold Schwarzenegger, plays like three different versions of himself. The most prominent one being old Arnold as we know him today. They make up this whole kind of conceit where, because he has bio skin, that it ages like normal skin, so that's how he's able to look the way he does now. And it's sort of the final step in trying to keep canceling each other out, where he's now been sent to Sarah Connor as a child, and he's been her surrogate robot dad. Up until the point in which Jai Courtney comes and he's like, Skynet's a thing and we gotta protect and Judgment Day. And she's like, yeah, I know. Like, come with me. Right. I expected you. We're all ready to go here. And he's like, wait, what? And then they go into the future for a little bit and, they get attacked by another robot who's very connected to them personally. And it kind of, muddles up the emotions around their mission.
Well, you're not really spoiling anything. You can say who it is. I mean, they already spoil it in the trailer.
It's spoiled in the trailer, yeah. Jason Clarke, John Connor, has been transformed into a mini-bot, a nanobot Terminator, and he still has the memories and the life and the sort of the personality of John Connor, but he's also totally Skynet evil and blah, blah, blah.
And he doesn't have a weird scar on his face that points out that he has little, really, really small lips. That's the one thing that made that scar. He made it really apparent that Jason Clarke has really small lips compared to his head.
Well, and he has a big head, too, as most famous actors do.
Yes.
I mean, it's a very convoluted plot, which, it's a Terminator movie, so there's always a little bit of that in there anyways because of their time travel rules that's existed throughout all of these. There's also kind of a lot like, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World. It also seems to be doing a lot of calling back. And I think there's a little bit of Terminator's greatest hits in this movie.
I think that's true, but I also think that this one is about a billion times more exposition heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, right off the bat, they're expositioning at you, which exposition isn't necessarily a bad thing. You can do that in a movie. It can be fine. But when it's
somewhat necessary, depending on the story
right.
you're trying to tell. And when it's a time travel story, it can be very necessary.
But this one was just like hand-holding. I mean, everybody knows the Terminator right. fucking story. Nobody needs to be told it.
But the idea, I think, here is that this is, like Jurassic World, sort of a soft reboot. So the idea right. is we're going to clean the slate. We're going to, etch-a-sketch, shake the etch-a-sketch clean. And start over fresh. And so there's a little bit of sort of the Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek thing going on here, where this plot is supposed to sort of erase all the other ones. Did sort of a similar thing with Days of Future Past, the last X-Men movie.
That's true. But I will say one of the big differences, though, is like where those films did it in spirit, they started it over. This one literally does that.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, it does. I thought you were saying that it didn't do it very well.
Oh, no, I was just saying that it literally starts it over. I am saying that in the long run, that's what I was planning on saying. Yeah, I'll just get it out there. I don't think this movie did it at all well. It was pretty schlocky and horrible. Both Emilia Clarke and Jay Courtney are bad. They're pretty bad. I don't know how Jay Courtney got a job originally. Because I don't mean to be mean, but I mean, the guy showed up in Die Hard 5. Wasn't really that good.
No, noticeably bad, actually. Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, he's usually, I've never seen him and been like, oh yeah, he's decent, but you know. So I don't know how he keeps getting these jobs. I don't know how it works. I apparently don't understand Hollywood.
Right. He was in Jack Reacher as well. And he's in those Divergent movies, which I've never seen. And he's going to be in Suicide Squad. I think every once in a while, Hollywood likes to find these guys. He's like, you know, strapping, you know, Abercrombie model looking people. And they just decide he's going to be your it guy.
He does,
get over
he
it.
He does
world.
Have a nice ass. That is true. I will give him that. He's worked on those a lot.
Yeah. Well, he's one of those people. Like, and I think there's, you know, yeah, I can't really defend his performance in this movie or many of the other ones I've seen. And I don't know, how important is the plot really to him, even though he's sort of our cipher into this? Like, ultimately, does he really need to be in the movie?
No. I mean, what's funny, too, is I think that this movie, the gestation of this movie, originally started as Terminator raises Emilia Clarke as a dad. In the 50s. Like, that was the beginning of what this movie was supposed to be. And now...
And instead we get that in like a 5-minute flashback.
Right. And we get... And the thing is anything interesting in this movie is buried really, really deep in bad exposition and bad acting. And even... I mean, I will say there are two people in this film that I kind of enjoyed. I still enjoyed Arnold Schwarzenegger. He played his role fine, even if he was a little, some of his lines were poorly written. One specifically where he has to explain things to people. It's like, oh, yeah. Thanks. Thank you, Exposition Robot Man. And then I really enjoy, I wish our cipher was J.K. Simmons. Wish that was our point of view, because if that would be really humorous, is because it's like this poor, like drunk man that keeps like these robots keep popping up in his life from the future. And, like, it just keeps ruining his day. That's what I want.
Yeah, he has a really kind of fun... He's sort of the one, like, thing that brings levity here. Sort of Arnold Schwarzenegger, too, only because I think he's so phoning it in that it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah.
I think Jason Clarke's fine. I think he's still a little hungry to stay relevant, so he does a pretty good job with how little he's given to do.
Oh, I think he's
acting wise.
I think he's an awesome actor, and I think he's decent in this. I just think it's poorly acted and kind of directed. I mean, honestly, it's just like it's like I feel like it's like, you know, the stereotype of millennials.
Sure.
Well, if you took that stereotype and made them direct a movie about Terminator, they'd never seen it before. They were told the story. And then they had to make the movie. That's what it seems like to me. I mean, that might be a really weird way to say that, but it seems like this is just the studio.
It feels uninformed.
It feels uninformed, and it feels like this is, you know, the studio system really wants to force a new franchise on this generation.
Right.
I mean, maybe that was that was my Terminator way of explaining how this film feels, but yeah, it's
it's clunky as hell.
It's bad.
It doesn't move very well. It's well, always sort of moving in fits and starts because the plot keeps kind of reversing in on itself and becoming something else.
Well, your review for Jurassic World was like, if we stripped everything away that you said good about Jurassic World, that's the scene.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really.
Well, when I was watching this, I did have one thought that occurred to me, like, during some of the action sequences and, you know, sort of the callbacks to, like, Terminator 2 and whatever. Mm-hmm. I was thinking to myself, you know, a lot of these, like, reboots,
right,
and stuff that come out, or fourths and franchises or whatever, I always kind of resent them just a little bit, because I think in my head, especially if they're bad, I think in my head, it doesn't matter how shitty this is. If I showed somebody who was 15 years old the old one, mm-hmm. they're going to think that the new one is better just because it's new. That it looks better, it, you know, it moves a little faster than movies did in the 80s and, or 70s or whatever. So they're always going, no matter what, it's going to be really hard to convince a younger audience that they're getting a cheaper, bullshittier version of the thing. Well, not the case with this movie. I actually think that you could show a 15-year-old, you could do the Pepsi challenge between T2 and this movie, and they're gonna know that Terminator 2 is a better made, more interesting, more thrilling, better action sequence, better CGI movie. Like, yeah. This feels really kind of shoddy.
Well, what's weird, it's talking about CGI. So, like, when we're looking at, the little helicopter thingies and the different, moving parts in, the different moving, big robots that they show in the post-apocalyptic future. Uh-huh. The reason they look terrible is because you're doing CG of models. And I don't think that ever works very well, because models specifically have a very palpable design, whereas CG is light. And so it looks like you're building, it looks like you're doing a weird light show. Like, it looks like if you're at, a theme park and you're doing one mm-hmm. of those 3D ride kind of things, but you took your glasses off. It looks silly. It's like, why did you do this? There was a reason.
It's a little weightless, is what you're saying.
Well, it's not just weightless. Like, even the dimensions and the way that the light comes off of it, and the way that it there's no physicality to it. It's more than, I've seen CG that still looks real, but has no weight to it. This is just this is just completely missing the physicality at all of the thing. And it's like it wants to be the thing, but it's not. And you're afraid of it because it's going to stab you in your sleep.
Okay. Is there anything here that you maybe liked?
Like I said, I like J.K. Simmons. Yeah. I thought Arnold was sort of fun. I actually don't think that the idea, the main idea for the movie is necessarily that bad. It's just how it's executed. Completely another way.
Yeah, they try and fit in a little bit of this kind of post-Snowden, what's the word, NSA spying kind of stuff. Like, that's sort of been, the hot topic if you're doing these, robot movies, is to try to fit that in somewhere. And they even go so far as, to Skynet is utilizing our smartphones to track us where we are.
Right.
Which, I mean, that's probably just true. That's not even science fiction at this point.
No, it isn't.
So I mean, some of that it's maybe vaguely interesting. Actually, Matt Smith, the Doctor Who,
yes,
the last Doctor Who, he has a itty bitty little part in this movie, and I would have wished it would have been bigger, because he's a much more interesting villain than the Jason Clark reversal reveal thing.
Well, which would have been maybe a tad interesting if you wouldn't have known.
Yeah,
but they all of a sudden were just like, we're going to show it in the trailer anyway, even though it's integral for you not to know as part of the film experience. But right from the bat, you see him, say Jay Courtney and him talking, and you're like, okay, this is the bad guy in the future. Cool. I know what this film's about.
Yeah. So they kind of pulled the rug out from under themselves that way. And then on top of it, it's not a very successful action movie. I will say that there was one kind of clever thing that I thought was sort of both funny and sort of clever in one of these Terminator movies that we've never seen before. The idea that, whenever these people get sent into the future, they're always kind of sent in the most perfect environment. It's always an abandoned alley, mm-hmm. and they're given at least 12 minutes to kind of get their bearings and find somebody for clothes. And they kind of flip that around, and Jason Clark and Emilia Clarke, or not Jason Clark, but Jai Courtney and Emilian Clarke are sent into the future in the middle of the freeway.
Well, they also when Jai Courtney sent back to the future, back to the past, He's dropped from above.
From like 12 feet. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of like perfectly, you know, kneeling on one knee and all that stuff that we've always seen. So I think that's kind of funny as a, like a visual gag and also sort of clever. And,
but it still kind of does that mocking the old one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. It's a nod and a wink, obviously, but I think it sort of works for what it's doing. And I think from the point in which they go to 2017, mm-hmm. to about, I don't know, maybe like a 30 minute stretch there, I felt like, okay, the movie's finally started. We've already been in the movie for like an hour 15, but sure.
Okay, yeah.
Now I get what's sort of going on and I get where we're going with it. And then it kind of just fizzles out. So it doesn't really save it by any means, but I there's a little stretch in there that kind of works.
I would have said that a week ago, but now as I've sat on it, I've just been like, nope, it's all boiled down to just how bad it was.
Yeah,
because I think we had exactly the same movie-going experience, honestly, from talking to you right now. But,
I mean, ultimately, when I came away from it, I just thought, this feels so familiar and tired. Like, all of this. Like, these characters, this world, this setup. It's like, why do... Like, they get this get-out-of-jail-free card every time they do this, because it's time travel. You can pretty much, like I said, erase the slate and start clean. Why do they continue to tell the same story every single time? Like, why not create new characters? Why not go into a different part of the world where Skynet's affecting something or other? Like, why does it always have to be these three characters, this same setup, being repeated over and over and over and over again? It's like almost like these characters are stuck in some sort of Greek hell.
Well, maybe. There's a movie for you. That's a movie I want to see.
And so is the audience, because they have to keep seeing this movie over and over again.
What's funny, though, is that that's kind of the message of the movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
Is that that the future isn't, like, set or anything like that. So, yeah. I wouldn't see this.
No, I don't know. If you're a completist, if you've seen them all, and then I'm sure you're interested, and you even watch like the Sarah Connor Chronicles on TV. Like, if you're that into it, then you'll probably find enough here to enjoy. But I don't know. I just the whole thing just felt kind of feckless and boring to me.
No, for sure. I mean, even if you did watch all that, I would say don't go see this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. To me, I couldn't sit down. I mean, this is the thing, though. Is when I was watching it in the theater, there were like at least a handful of people that I know loved it and laughed so much throughout the whole thing. And I don't mean in a mocking way. I mean, they were hitting the
beats. They were just in it. It was working on working for them.
Well, yeah, they were even making like, oh, like those kind of sounds. And I was just like, oh my, really? This one? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I would even go so far as to say that the McG one was better.
Oh, I would say it. I liked that one.
I do too, but I think we're the only people, you, me, and Keith are the only people in the world who like that movie.
Now, I'll take it. I'll take everybody.
And
that
I have
says,
not seen it since it came out, so I could be wrong about it.
I think people wanted to hate it, and there was a weird Christian Bale Batman voice thing going on right then that people hated. Yeah. I didn't give a shit about the Batman voice, and I didn't care that he yelled at a person on the set. And I thought it was fine. Mm-hmm. It was different. That was better.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sort of ridiculous in parts because, I mean, he was like swimming down to a submarine and all this, but that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, yeah.
So it wasn't just like a shoddy version of Terminator 1 having angry sex with Terminator 2.
Well, more like, I would say, Terminator 3 having sex with both Terminator 1 and 2. Like, raping them.
And on that note, let's go ahead and move on to our Netflix homework, which I assigned you, I believe.
Yep, you did.
All right, do you want to explain this one? You have to now.
Sure. Let me look it up. I'm gonna need some notes on this one.
Okay. If you want to just read their the log line on IMDb, I don't blame you.
I keep forgetting. Shadow of the Rainbow? Rainbow of the Shadow? What is this?
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Beyond the Black Rainbow. It's just a basic family drama. Sure. It's about this little girl that is kind of coming into her own sexuality, and she has this kind of this dad that really wants to control it. Am I off on this?
No, technically no, but I think you might be leaving out some of the more.
Well, this is what my
identifying.
I really related this movie. It was a lot like my childhood, just kind of reversed. This movie is really fucking weird. It's mostly style and aesthetic.
Yeah.
Kind of what I told you is true, but here, yeah, I'll read the logline from IMDb just to kind of marry what I said to this. Despite being under heavy sedation, a young woman tries to make her way into the Arboria Institute, a secluded quantifistic, quasi-futuristic commune. I think they're making references to Scientology. It's stuff's happening in this movie. There's some fucking glowing pyramids and people turning into white creatures and chasing people and moody music and weird rapey tones the whole time. I pretty much explained the movie spot on. I don't know what else. Here's my consensus on the movie. I think it's sort of interesting to watch, but not good at all.
Interesting.
The aesthetics and the style are great, but this is a movie that you need to be super fucking high to watch. Like, that's the only way to watch this film.
Seriously. I think it might help. Or I mean, maybe that'd be bad, because I could see that becoming terrifying.
For you.
Depending on what kind of trip you're having.
That's fair. I really like it. One of the best moments is when they're not in this weird scientific commune thing,
mm-hmm.
and they meet these two metalheads.
Right. Because it takes place in 83.
I had no idea. I had no idea what was going on most of the movie. I was just like, okay.
I know what you're talking about, and there's a certain amount of. I would agree with you that about 90% of the movie is just style. Mm-hmm. It's largely a big execution of style. The movie that I thought about the most while I was seeing, I thought about a lot of movies while I was seeing it because it's very referential. But I also thought mostly about sort of its overall effect and maybe its overall success as a film of the Nicholas Winding Refn movie Only God Forgives, which okay. I felt very similar about, which was like, sure looks beautiful. You could hang about any frame on your wall, but I don't know what any of it means.
I felt like I got more out of that one. Well, I thought I understood that film more. And then I watched Only God Forgives. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I watched interviews with Nicholas Winding Refn, and I don't think I understood that film at all. I was like, I guess I don't understand this film. I lied.
Well, and there's certainly both movies are very open to interpretation. As far as the referentiality goes of this movie... like I said, it says in the title card in the front that it's supposed to take place in 1983, and there's all these kind of vaguely sort of neo-futurist kind of aesthetic design stuff in it. So it looks like sort of how people in the late 70s and early 80s thought the future would look.
Right.
And so there's a lot of this weird angular stuff and a lot of like reds and oranges and you know, warm colors being used throughout.
It looks beautiful. I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, in certain sequences, you know, are stylistically very interesting. A lot of the time, I felt like I was watching a music video,
than
I was watching a movie.
Oh yeah, like a really long weird music video, but like you kind of were into because it was weird.
Yeah,
this was an Apex Twin.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that. I felt a little bit like felt a little bit like a Marilyn Manson video or something.
Maybe 2001 Space Odyssey, but just like the first like, I mean, you know, like 2 hours and just have that last part with the baby floating through space.
There's a lot of Kubrick in this. Surely I think a decent amount of Cronenberg, like Videodrome era Cronenberg in sort of the tone. There's a heavy amount of Lynch all throughout. Even a little bit of like Ken Russell's Altered States, I was reminded of.
Sure.
And then plot wise, there's like sort of these hints or inflections of Akira going on. Cause I guess the idea is there's sort of like they're this commune. They don't really, this is a movie that could have used more exposition, honestly. There's this commune that sort of started in the 60s with like this whole Timothy Leary sort of LSD experiments that psychically link these three main characters together.
So you did some research on this.
No, I'm extrapolating based on what I guess I saw.
Okay, fair enough.
And so as she's making her escape, all three characters are sort of like, you know, aware of it in sort of the strange way. I guess I kind of like it only because it looks so cool. Like, there's something about it that feels very much kind of like film school.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of amateurish in that way. Like, not the actual setups or shots or anything. Like, I mean, it's art directed within an inch of its life. And it's, you know, very precisionally shot.
It's storytelling.
It's storytelling. But I don't know if necessarily that's what this movie wants to be.
Well, you referenced all this really great stuff that I think is good and has a little bit more substance and has something behind its storytelling and why it's telling it that way. Whereas this just feels like there's stuff happening at you.
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like it's about much. Even once I was able to more or less kind of piece together the plot, ultimately I'm like, so what? Like, what are you saying? And I don't really know if it's saying anything.
I don't think it is. Again, for style and if or you're really high, I think it's kind of fun to watch it in that level. And I get your comment when you say, like, if you want, you know, you're into weird experimental first time college, maybe like almost like THX, like kind
of
thing.
There's a decent amount of THX in this movie as well. I mean, like I said, it is in love with the genre.
Yeah.
And it has that kind of Euro inflection in the way that like when Refn riffs on American genre movies, he always kind of brings that kind of mood based Euro filmmaking to it. Yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, it doesn't really add up to much, but I sure liked looking at it.
The thing is I liked scenes.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like it as a whole because I was just like, for some reason, the metal scene really wanted the whole soundtrack to be more reminiscent of that.
I really liked, I mean, it's very, like, synthy, like, Tangerine Dream-ish. But yeah, I dug the soundtrack, the score.
I think the score works, but for some reason I just wanted something more lively because, I mean, the scenes, just how they drag and stuff like that. Like, I mean, this isn't saying, like, watching an old film and being like, oh, it drags and blah, blah, blah. This is a new film that does actually drag.
No, yeah, it's purposely slow. And thank God that it's so weird to look at because you have to look at these things for a while.
No, but I don't think it always pulls you through. I think sometimes you do look away. You're like, oh, I'm going to check Facebook. She'll be crawling down the hall still by the time I'm done doing whatever I need to do. I brushed my teeth. I went to the bathroom. Oh, she's in the hall. Great. No, I mean, there are things to appreciate about the movie, but overall, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to be like, I don't know if you want to watch it, but if you do, maybe you should be high. Or be willing to, you know, for this experience. Those are the two things. If I was, like, more aware of how weird it was going to be, then maybe I would have been like, okay. So, you know, if somebody would have told me, this is a film that needs to just a little bit of like, okay, guys, it'll be okay. Just let it happen.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of let it wash over you.
Yes.
That it takes to enjoy it. You don't try and make it make sense. Don't try and read too much into it, because honestly, I don't think there's much there to read into. I think on an aesthetic level, I think it's kind of breathtaking, honestly. I don't I wouldn't give this movie a pass. I think it is an interesting failure. But I would be into maybe seeing what else this guy does, because he has the chops. He knows where to put the camera, and he's certainly a great art director. He just needs to work on, like, maybe if he's given a screenplay by somebody else, or, you know, can adapt something that's a little bit more streamlined. You know, I don't know. It is what it is.
It's style to the point.
It's kind of up its own ass. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, for sure. People are in red suits, turn into white things with eyes. Girls crawling down hallways.
I think this guy can make great music videos.
Oh, I think he can make great music videos, and I think, like, or kids movies. I think he should make kids movies.
Well, there's a little bit of a, and it kind of, it's a little too late. Like, if they wanted to find a plot here,
mm-hmm.
Towards the end, there's a little bit of a Alice in Wonderland-ish thing going on as she's making her escape.
Sure.
And I feel like that maybe could have started earlier in the movie, and then he could just enjoy these set pieces as these weird episodes,
mm-hmm.
Rather than the kind of front-heavy backstory stuff that never really kind of comes together anyway.
Well, again, the style is interesting. It's just ad nauseum. I don't know if there's really much more to say about it, because, again, like we said, it's all... I don't know. It's a lot of style in those instances.
But, all right.
Check it out. Maybe. Don't. I don't know.
What do you have for us next week?
Next week, we're going to be watching Simple Plan by Sam Raimi.
Yep. Mid-90s
flick. Thriller. I think it's a crime thriller of sorts.
Yeah, this was during that time, like, the, came out, I think, just a little bit after Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And,
might have a little bit of an inflection from it.
Yeah, because of the friendship between the Coen brothers and Sam Raimi that's always sort of been there, and the movies are often talked about in conjunction. So
I didn't know that they were friends. I mean, it makes sense because of their...
Well, they made the Hudsucker Proxy together.
Oh, did they? Okay.
And they kind of came up in around the same time in the same film community.
That actually makes the movie make a lot more sense.
So we'll be talking about The Simple Plan next week, and if anybody has anything to say about any of the movies we talked about today, Terminator Genisys, or Beyond the Black Rainbow, or what we're going to be talking about next week, I don't know what our main review is going to be, I haven't looked yet. It's Ant-Man, yes, you're right. So if anyone has anything to say about that too, you can go ahead and email us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/JabberPodcast. You can find us on Twitter at JabberPodcast. You can subscribe to us and write us a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. You can also find us on the Zune or Windows Podcast Network, as well as Pocket Cast. Read my weekly movie reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. I still haven't posted my Terminator one, but I'll do that after this. Richard has a blog at rdwally.weebly.com. And go ahead and listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at their podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com, as well as Leland in Olympia, his podcast, dampercast.com, and Patrick at Make Dad Read Comics. Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.